This is the son of PC JJ.
This is PCJ Radio.
Media Network Plus, produced and presented by Paulette McQuarrie and Keith Perrell.
Hello, it's very nice to have you with us once again.
It certainly is, because in this show, we are going to focus on you. That's right, you, the listeners, and what your thoughts are with the past and present of international shortwave broadcasting.
We'll also be joined by a voice many of you are familiar with from the days when Media Network aired on Radio Netherlands, and that's Victor Gunatilica.
We will also be announcing the winners of a contest we had on last month's show, so stay tuned. Well, since our last show in December, the Media Network Plus page at pcjmedia.com had a survey running to find out what listeners think about the decline in shortwave broadcasting since 1999. And today, we have the results.
Well, many of you know that since the collapse of communism in Eastern Europe, we've seen not just a drop in frequencies in the last 20 years, but also a number of broadcasters go the way of the dinosaurs. Stations like Swiss Radio International, YLE Radio Finland, and more recently Radio Sweden, and many others.
Now, we've all heard the reasons for the cutbacks from management and governments, but what about the listeners, and what do you think? Well, the survey we added to the webpage on December the 28th, and it was very successful. We had over 223 people. Now, I say that because just before recording this program, two other people left their comment, and we got some great feedback.
Okay, so let's now look at the first question on the poll. Who do you think is to blame for the decline in shortwave broadcasting from the West? And the results come from a choice of six answers that listeners could choose. And they were the following. Poor management. That was 33% chose that. Too slow to react to program changes after 1989. That was 29%. 14.9% said out of touch with listeners. 77.8% said changing technology. 49% said global political changes. And finally, staff in most international broadcasting stations do not know what shortwave is, and 43% chose that.
The second question was, can the decisions made be reversed, meaning the cuts that have taken place, can they be changed? 57.7% said yes, and 42.3% said no. Well, it seems very close. Mind you, in some cases, the decision cannot be reversed. As you may know, many shortwave transmitter sites have either been dismantled or the land has been sold off completely to somebody else. Such was the case with the Flevo site once used by Radio Netherlands, which is now a windmill farm. Just before recording today's show, I received the following note from Andy Sennett at Radio Netherlands. He said that Radio Netherlands Worldwide has made the decision to close its Bonaire shortwave relay station in October 2012. The head of the program distribution department said the closure was regrettable, but stressed that this was a financial decision and doesn't mean that Radio Netherlands Worldwide will stop shortwave broadcasting completely. What they will be doing, however, is transferring some of their broadcasts that are from Bonaire at the moment to other relay stations. And, you know, Paulette, when you look at the schedule that was coming out of Bonaire, I have to say I could sort of understand it, because running a shortwave transmitter relay is not cheap, and they have very few hours on the air. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. But also, I'm wondering, you know, a few years ago, they spent a lot of money to renovate the whole facility, and they installed a couple of new transmitters. So I'm wondering where those are going to end up. Now, moving on to the part of the survey that was very interesting was the third part. Now, the question was, if you can sit down with management, staff, and governments from international broadcasters, what would you tell them? Now, I should mention right now that we would have loved to have used all the comments, but unfortunately, if we did, we would have a two-hour show.
Well, first, we go to Skip Airy in the United States, and he said, For various reasons, the U.S. public never had a strong commitment to shortwave. Local, regional, national stations and programming developed quickly, and folks got in the habit of listening to programming on a stable schedule via local outlets. Shortwave always had to adjust its programming around propagation. The entertainment commercial sponsor model drove the train. News and information were secondary except in times of crisis.
Staying in the United States, we now go to Ron Trotto. He wrote, "I believe the staff, not knowing what shortwave is to blame, plus the changing technology. A lot of staff are afraid of change and panic, and shortwave becomes the fall guy." Luis Villabueno in Mexico wrote, "I think it's a matter of multiple factors. In my humble viewpoint, it can be explained by, number one, poor management. There are many cases, like here in Mexico, for example, all shortwave stations that broadcast do not have technicians to take care of the equipment, except for maybe Radio Educación. Out of touch with the audience. Many DXers I know do not write the station or send reception reports, and the stations are always telling us, please contact us. In my personal case, I write letters monthly to every major shortwave station and send some reception reports asking for QSLs. But I receive less and less QSLs every time."
And now we go to Andy Lehrer in Toronto, Canada, who sent his comments via an audio file.
Well, Keith, to answer your question, I think technology, specifically the internet and satellite, is the reason for the decline of shortwave listening and shortwave broadcasting in the West. With online streaming and podcasting, it's much easier to simply go to a website than to pull out a shortwave radio. And younger generations aren't getting into the DX habit as a result. Also, 24-hour news satellite services being offered by various countries are taking up a lot of the audience that used to listen to shortwave. To elaborate, I think a lot of non-DX shortwave listeners got into the habit in order to listen to the BBC World Service or VOA in order to find out more about a breaking news, in order to follow a breaking news event overnight, or find out more about an international event that wasn't getting adequate coverage on your domestic radio or television station. And while you were doing that, you would tune around and come across other stations such as Radio Netherlands, which had and has an excellent news service. So if you were listening to shortwave on a regular basis, you'd perhaps develop the habit of listening to several shortwave stations, and then looking for shortwave stations and become a DXer as a result. Now, in my case, I got into shortwave listening in the 1980s because I was a news junkie and liked listening to the BBC, and also because of events in the Soviet Union, it was interesting to listen to Radio Moscow and other news services as well. Now, today, there are CNN, BBC, Al Jazeera, and RT, as well as countless newspapers and other news sites online from around the world, so us 24-hour news junkies don't need to turn on shortwave either to hear international news at odd hours or to get global perspectives. And in the developed world, there's also satellite radio, which, unlike shortwave listening, is accessible while you're driving. Now, if I can add one other comment, I think a lot of the reason people listen to international radio, at least outside of North America, was to find out what's going on in their own country, and not because they wanted to find out what's happening, say, in Belgium. And I think one consequence of the Cold War ending is that many international broadcasters no longer see their purpose as trying to win the hearts and minds of people in the opposing camp or in non-aligned countries. So whether this was done through heavy-handed propaganda, such as was the approach of Radio Moscow for many years, and the Eastern Bloc, or by trying to build trust by providing information neutrally, which was the approach of the BBC and Radio Netherlands and Radio Canada International, that purpose, which was to persuade in hopes of influencing foreign public opinion, and in that way either pressuring foreign governments from within or giving dissidents the information and tools they need to organize, no longer exists. The justification now, at least for shortwave, is mostly to try to spread information about your own country. Radio Canada International is typical of this. Previously, RCI's shortwave programs had a heavy international component combined with news about Canada. Now it's completely Canada-centric, and it's aimed primarily at people who are prospective immigrants to Canada, or less so to Canadian expatriates. Consequently, where RCI was seen as a respected mid-sized broadcaster and a good source for news as late as the 80s and early 90s, now it's really a boutique service aimed at a far narrower audience. For shortwave to be relevant, broadcasters have to emphasize international news and other information that's relevant to their audiences, and mix in information about the host country, their own country as a result, as an extra, rather. Even if providing a positive view of the host country is the main purpose of the broadcaster, they won't achieve a large sustained audience if that is a dominant feature of their content. Of course, if a country is in the middle of a major international story, then people will be listening in order to find out what's going on in that country. But unless a country is very unlucky or stuck in a permanent crisis, those sorts of audiences will not last. My name's Andy Lair, and I'm in Toronto.
Now to some comments that were sent anonymously. They're short and right to the point. Seeing that it is a trend to move from shortwave to the internet, why is internet not used to its full potential? Why can't Radio Portugal or Radio Norway have broadcasts in English via the internet so that we can listen via podcast or Wi-Fi?
Whoever sent this comment makes a good point. Many years ago, Denmark, Norway, and some other countries cut shortwave broadcasts or the stations entirely because of the high cost of running shortwave transmitters. Now that this cost is no longer an issue, why don't they come back with programming on the internet? Well, just before recording this program, I did contact two, and they said no comment. To this end, I would like to mention that this has happened. For the first time ever, I believe. Radio Mexico International, which had stopped broadcasting in 2004, now has returned with an online service. Some of the other comments that have come in are, they need to create more interesting content and keep up with the times, and they ought not to put all their eggs in the internet basket. Chris Frietis said, from what I've seen while researching this trend, I would go out on a limb and say that digital media has a lot to do with the declining trend. Listeners these days rather prefer tuning into their favorite shows online. This is also making an impact on local AM and FM stations and the Arbitron ratings here in the United States, show that more listeners are moving towards new media such as high-definition radio, DAB, DRM, which is Digital Radio Mondial, satellite radio, and Wi-Fi radio. Whether it's on a computer or mobile device, such as an iPod Touch, audiences are choosing digital media over more traditional means, such as shortwave radio. Most people that I have talked to have said that they have no idea what shortwave is or can do without it. I must admit, even I have listened to much more content through my internet radio apps on my iPod Touch than my shortwave radio. In my case, it's much easier and convenient to pick out of a list of stations of my favorites list and tune in with just one touch than to grab my Sony ICF radio to tune into the station's frequency, only to hear static because of poor propagation, or that the broadcaster is no longer on shortwave and he means to North America, such as Radio Netherlands, BBC, and Radio Sweden. On that note, I still enjoy listening to shortwave on a regular basis. Despite the downward trends, there are still plenty of exciting sounds over the international airwaves. One thing that shortwave has over Wi-Fi is immediacy. You have to connect to the internet to hear web stations, whereas all you have to do with a world band radio is turn it on and tune to the frequency anywhere around the world. Sometimes the audio quality of a radio receiver trumps the electronic-sounding voices on web radio due to low bitrate. You also don't have to worry about the signal cutting off on you during the middle of a broadcast. Also, shortwave is still strong in many regions around the world, especially in locations where modern technology just simply can't reach the audiences. I'd say that old and new media have the ability to coexist with one another.
Indeed they do, Keith. I think he's got a very strong argument there. Some others simply wrote, switch to internet radio, this is the future. And keep doing radio, true radio, free radio. Now, Keith, you spent this past summer, you spent 2 weeks in Indonesia, and you have an interesting anecdote about shortwave radio.
That's right, I do. I actually, like you said, I went down there for 2 weeks, and I spent a lot of time in Jakarta. But there's one area of Indonesia that I had never been to before, and that is Aceh. Now, many of you, and you, Paulette, will know about the big tsunami that hit Banda Aceh a few years ago, where a number of people lost their lives. Actually, it was into the thousands. So I went to Banda Aceh, and I was staying in this small village, in this small little village hotel. The first night that I was there, probably just after 9 o'clock in the evening, there was a knock at my door. And it was a man by the name of Ibrahim. He came to my hotel because, first, he wanted to practice his English. And second, he heard that there was a foreigner in this village. And the last time they had a foreigner in this village was about maybe 7 or 8 years ago. So he came by my hotel. We talked for a bit. And I said to him, I said, you know, where did you study English? And he said, oh, I listened to the BBC World Service and the Voice of America's special English programming. And I said, do you still listen today? And he said, oh, yeah, I do, whenever I can. And that depends on whether or not we have electricity in our village. And we started talking about international radio. And then he said, do you have a shortwave receiver? And I said, well, actually, I have two with me. And normally when I travel, depending on where I go, I will bring two with me, my Sanjin ATS-909 and a radio that I just got a couple of months ago called a Texan Green 88. Now, listeners in the United States will know this radio as a Grundig FR-200. And this radio is fantastic because you don't need any batteries. You just crank it a few times and it can run for about an hour. Anyway, we said goodbye after an hour. The next day, when I got back to the hotel, there was a note for me asking if I'd be interested in go visiting his family outside in the countryside at nighttime. And I called him on his cell phone, which was a whole task in itself. The line was not very good. Anyway, he came pick me up. It was around 8 o'clock at night, pitch black. There were no lights in the street. I'm sitting in the back of his motorcycle. We must have drove, I would guess, maybe 20 kilometers, really into the countryside. And we got to his house, and I met his wife, and I met his six children. And, of course, I brought my shortwave radio with me. Anyway, we started listening to the BBC World Service. His neighbor next door heard the sound of the BBC World Service and the VOA coming. Now, you have to remember, there was no electricity, and nobody was actually able to watch TV or listen to radio that night. Well, his neighbor came over and asked him, where did you get the batteries? He said, well, no, it's my foreign friend here has this radio. Anyway, he came by and he started listening as well. All of a sudden, and I'm not kidding, within, I would estimate, maybe 90 minutes, there were 20 to 23 people from this local village in his living room listening to my little Texan Green 88, to the BBC, Radio Netherlands, and the Voice of America. And I started asking them, I said, you know, a number of years ago, I said, you know, a lot of international broadcasters had programming in Indonesian. They're either gone completely or they're cutting back. And everybody told me the same thing. They said, okay, we understand why some broadcasters would want to go to the internet because of sound quality, and it is a lot cheaper to distribute the programs. But they said, for them, the internet is just not an option. The village that we were in, they don't have high-speed internet. They have dial-up. And that's when... that's what I was about to say. And the dial-up works when they have electricity. And their only option to get news from not just the outside world, but also from Indonesia, is via shortwave. So when I hear about these cuts taking place in these stations, I do have to giggle sometimes. I just wonder what these managers think when they go on these fact-finding tours, spend a lot of taxpayers' dollars, spend their time in five-star hotels, and then say, nobody listens. Well, they're going to big cities. But never once have I heard from managers that have gone on these fact-finding tours saying that they went to some small local village somewhere in the South Pacific, Indonesia, or Africa. They just don't do it. So, as far as I'm concerned, some of the decisions that have been made are ludicrous. And that's all I'm going to say on that.
Further to to what we were just talking about, we contact Victor Gunatelica in Sri Lanka. Many of you know Victor as a regular contributor for Media Network on Radio Netherlands.
Victor, you've been listening to shortwave radio for many, many years, just like a lot of us have, and we've all seen changes that have taken place, especially over the last 20 years, but there were also changes before that. But nothing as dramatic as, say, over the last 15 years. Now, shortwave itself, do you think that today, in this year, 2011, that shortwave will still play an important role in areas like Africa and Southeast Asia?
Well, I definitely feel that there is a place for shortwave. I'm not saying that there isn't a place for other media and that shortwave is king. No, but shortwave is still relevant. And I would go to the extent of saying not only in Asia and Africa, but in other parts of the world as well, if shortwave broadcasting is handled in the way that it should.
Now, what do you mean handled by the way that it should? Because I've heard from some people when we were researching this program that have said, you know, the problem with shortwave is that the content that maybe once was there is no longer there. Now, a lot of shortwave broadcasters, we're not going to mention any names, but they're all trying to sound like carbon copies of each other.
You know, Keith, what I believe is to have a successful broadcast on shortwave, there are two or three important things that you have to think of. You have to have a strong enough signal that the average people will enjoy. And the program content is the most important thing. You know, when you think back 50 years ago, in the heyday of broadcasting, how many people listened to radio station Peace and Progress? How many people really did listen or not to Radio Beijing or Peking? Because the signal was so strong, but the program content was lousy. People didn't want to be lectured at. But today, on the other hand, if you look at Radio China International, it has one of the strongest signals on the band, and the program content and the style has gone way beyond anybody's expectations. And today, it has a much wider audience right here in Sri Lanka than it ever had in the best of days of shortwave broadcasting. So this is what I say. Now, the Western broadcasters are cutting down on their transmitting time, on transmitters, on frequencies, and also the program people have less money to spend on their programming. So it's a very sad state when you think of the Western broadcaster. But if you take China, for instance, the investment, they are getting a good return on their investment, and easily today it's the premier broadcaster in the world.
You know, not too long ago I was discussing with somebody about music programming on shortwave, and they said, oh, music sounds terrible on shortwave. And I said, really? I want you to come to my place tonight. So they came over, and we tuned in to The Voice of America with their music programming, Border Crossings, with Larry London. And they were surprised. They were incredibly surprised at how good music can actually sound on shortwave when you have a good signal, when you have a good audio processor. It's interesting that you make that point.
Yeah, exactly. This is what I say. Now, The Voice of America, you just mentioned The Voice of America, Larry London. I listen to it almost every night, 5 days of the week, of course. And if I get a good frequency, then I won't tune out at all. Now, even in those days when there was shortwave, the only international broadcasting medium was shortwave, we did have records. We had gramophones, we had record players, we had tape recorders. But people, you see, you have a different audience for international radio. It doesn't mean that the best signal on shortwave will kick the internet or the home radio or home video system. No, there is a sizable and an important audience for international radio if you do it right. This is my point.
You know, not too long ago, a few years ago, in fact, I was talking to some shortwave broadcasters, people that work on the programming side and the content side. And it was always my belief, and how I was trained, is that if you're doing, let's say, music programming, for example, that will air on shortwave, you need to do a different equalization than you would, let's say, with standard programming, because the frequencies on shortwave There's either a lot of background noise, and shortwave is at a different frequency. And I was explaining this to them because they were making their shows sound as if they were for FM radio, but on shortwave they sounded horrendous. And I said, well, it's because you're not mixing them right.
Exactly. You have to not only understand what your program content is to different parts of the world, but how you process it, as you say, in your studio, what frequency. I mean, the thing is on shortwave. If you keep on amplifying the high frequencies, you end up losing because, shortwave doesn't have too many low frequencies there. So in the same way, the technical quality of the program matters, and also what type of programming that you distribute to different parts of the world. At the start of this interview, we said we are not going to mention names, and I'd like to do that, continue with that, Keith. But if you take some of the religious broadcasters who broadcast to South Asia, it's a program made in the United States with a strong American accent, which our people hardly can decipher. Now, you put on FM, on an FM, on a, what do you call it, on a placement, on a local broadcaster, and you have an American accent, and we are used to a form of British English, and people just don't understand what it's. So what do you say about then that even FM is a failure then? Mm-hmm. So you must know what to broadcast and how to process it, and then you will have your success. Just like I'd like to go back to my beginnings of broadcasting with Media Network. When DX Jukebox was there, it was a program, in the studio, imagining that this is what people like. When Jonathan Marks came on, he revolutionized the program, and we tied it up with what was happening in the world. If there was a coup d'etat in some African country, we would concentrate on that country's media. So we took it, and suddenly, overnight, the program started beating all figures. So that's what we have to do. Know to whom we are talking and who and what type of programming they would like to hear and how they would understand it. And we'll have a good equation, a formula of success.
Do you also think that some of the ludicrous changes that have taken place, what I have found is a lot of people, let's say, that work as either announcers or producers, or even the management of some international broadcasters. No names will be mentioned.
Yes,
but I have noticed that a lot of them, number one, either they have no idea what shortwave is, they've never listened to shortwave, and they know nothing at all about the medium. The funniest thing I remember was a few years ago, when I was still living in China, I was asked to accompany a group of international broadcasters that went on a fact-finding tour to China. Now, the cities that they went to were Beijing, Shanghai, Shenzhen, and Guangzhou. Now, in these four cities, first of all, nobody listens to shortwave. Nobody listens to shortwave in the cities. In China, a large percentage of the population, especially in the countryside, which is 90% of China, they actually tune even to shortwave for domestic broadcasters. So I remember they went to Beijing, they said, oh, I don't know why we're broadcasting in Chinese to China, because nobody in Beijing listens to shortwave. And I thought to myself, these are the people managing the stations?
Exactly. Decisions are taken about the broadcast, about the station, its finances, its budget, by people who are maybe appointed as political appointments, who know nothing or very little, or they are not concerned about what the broadcasters are doing. Some of the engineers are so frustrated, and they have no budget to keep the transmitters going on. And the program producers, they have no budget to make good programs. So finally, Keith, 2 years ago at the SWL Fest, I was asked to give my thoughts about radio, shortwave broadcasting. My opening lines were, shortwave is not dead, but it is being killed by people who should know better, but unfortunately do not.
That's a very, very true statement. Something I think that you would probably agree with. You know, we were just talking a moment ago about the sound quality on shortwave, and I think what some broadcasters have done, they've actually sort of killed it on purpose to push people towards listening on other platforms, because shortwave radio could sound good when it's engineered right, but if they don't have the budget and sound quality suffers, of course nobody is going to listen.
Well, as you said, you know, the way things are done, it's being driven out of business, we'll say. What happens is, you know, it's a chicken and egg situation. They say, okay, nobody listens to shortwave, or audiences are going down, so we put less money on the shortwave. I said, no, keep the money on shortwave. Put money on the new media, definitely. You have to go to the internet. You have to have streaming audio. But I don't know, in all my life, I have a free internet connection. I never listen to any broadcaster on the internet. I have so many other things to listen on the internet than a radio broadcast, which I can pick up on my radio. But what I'm saying is, thereby, you kill the broadcast. Now, for instance, to my country, the BBC had almost 6 channels at the peak hours, but today they have 2, and same for the Voice of America. So people find it difficult to get the station, and then naturally they start tuning out, or they can't find it. So you put less money every year on the broadcast, and people find it harder to hear, and the audience figures go down. So I say, okay, in 2000, there were 12% of people listening. Today there is 2%. You have killed your broadcast and people cannot listen. You take China Radio International, as you know, I keep harping back on China. 20 years ago, there would have been 1% or less of the shortwave audience listening to them. Today, there are no less than 30 clubs in Sri Lanka, Radio China International clubs. Oh, these are not clubs, you know, that people have formed to get a pennant, to get a card, to get a radio from China. No, they are people who listen because the programming is so strong, signal-wise, and the quality of programming. I mean, I don't have to elaborate. I don't have to give examples. Today, the China radio broadcast is so good. Fine, probably they have hired announcers, professional announcers. It's not like the, you know, the Chinese lady who couldn't be understood. Sometimes being a monitor for the VOA at the BBC, I get fooled that I'm listening to the VOA or the BBC. They're so good, quality, content, and successful.
Do you think these decisions that have been made over the last few years, do you think they can be reversed? And if they can be reversed, what do you think it would take?
Well, I have my doubts, because shortwave, the cutting down of budget, has nothing to do very much with the popularity or the unpopularity of shortwave. It's purely a case of economics. The United States, or we just heard the BBC has cut down something like 20% of its jobs in the BBC monitoring service. They're taking money off this, that. I mean, it's just a case that, you know, the West, some of the Western countries, they're in big economic problems. They're talking about $14-15 trillion in deficit. So, I mean, it is a matter of economics. Somewhere about 10, 15 years ago, the broadcasters, as the economics started squeezing in, they started transferring the cost of listening to the listener. What I mean is, today, you have to have your internet connection if you want to listen to the Swiss Radio International or some other broadcaster who has gone off shortwave. So I have to pay for my internet connection, for my electricity or whatever, and listen to somebody's broadcast. So it's a transferring of cost to the listener, which the listener cannot afford, or the listener will not take in according to his priorities. Why should I listen when I can get it on my shortwave radio, for instance? Or I don't listen at all.
You see, I find that it's strange when they make decisions on that basis, because if you think about, let's say, the budgets for, let's say, small to medium-sized stations, let's say like Radio Netherlands as an example, in the grand scheme of things, the Radio Netherlands budget is not that big.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you take the Voice of America budget, I mean, if you think about, let's say, what Washington spends in other areas, you know, that budget is not that big.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course. But the thing is, say, I have my loyalties to Radio Netherlands. I've been involved with it for so many years, almost 24 years of my life of broadcasting. But what I say is Radio Netherlands, their program schedule is not as large as the Voice of America. I mean, how many news broadcasts a day would the Voice of America, I mean, Radio Netherlands would make a one-hour program. The content is the same for all areas of the world, and they'll do a news broadcast every 4 hours or so. So the budget is in keeping with its outreach, and they'll have two frequencies or whatever. I mean, even today, I find it, even with the budget cuts, I find it much easier to find the BBC or the Voice of America than Radio Netherlands, or the chances that somebody will stumble on Radio Netherlands. Of course, it also comes to priorities. Does, for instance, Czech Radio International, which just signed off, I think, or it's going off in a couple of days or so, what has Czechoslovakia or Czech Republic got to do with international politics or anything? So they feel, well, our website is more than enough for us, and that if people want to find out some information about the Czech Republic or the Slovakia or whatever, about major players in the international field, like the Americans, the British, and then the other countries like Deutsche Welle. Now, you know, just to come back to the audibility, Deutsche Welle out of at 1600 to 1700 has the only English broadcast to South Asia. It's going on medium wave from Trincomalee beam to India, and two shortwave frequencies out of Trincomalee. I have zero reception of the Deutsche Welle here in Colombo, and we have almost everybody in Sri Lanka understands English, and we have no singular or Tamil broadcast. So Germany is out. So what I say is frequency management is important, and how you treat your audience. So, and how important you are in the world to get your voice to make an impact on world affairs. If you don't want that, if you want to hide away and do your little job, then fine, you don't need any broadcasting. But if you are a major player, you have to pay, you have to spend so that you have an effective voice. And then, for instance, if the Voice of America is not only entertainment, it's the voice of the American people to influence the world, tell this is what we think about what is happening here, there, somewhere else. So it's an international policy matter. It's a diplomatic matter. It's not only broadcasting shortwave.
Now, you're in Sri Lanka. A lot of people in Sri Lanka do speak English as a second language and understand it.
Yeah.
If you take, say, a broadcaster like Radio Australia, now, usually from around 23 hours to around 5 hours UTC, or even a bit later than that, around 6 hours UTC, here in Taiwan, they are booming in on 17750 kilohertz, a very, very clear signal. It is so clear that when I listen to Radio Australia, usually for the Asia-Pacific news at 11 o'clock local time, it is just as clear as any local AM station here in Taiwan.
Fine.
Is a station like Radio Australia, is that the kind of station that, say, the population in your region are particularly interested in because of their focus, and mainly focus on this region?
Well, Australia is a very important country for... I will come down to my country, Sri Lanka. Today, almost every middle-class family in Sri Lanka has at least one family member in Australia. And Australia is very important, but we don't get the signal that you're talking about in Taiwan. We can, even with my best receivers, I won't stumble on Radio Australia. I have to look for it, and with my headphones, I might get an S2 to 3 signal level from Radio Australia, because they are not beaming to South Asia. But those days, as a kid, with a domestic shortwave radio, a two-band radio, I knew nothing very much about matched antennas, just a piece of wire outside thrown out onto my roof. I could sit back and listen to Radio Australia booming in, whether it was cricket commentaries or Keith Glover's mailbag or the music by request. I used to send an email, an aerogram, not email, aerogram as a kid, ask my father for 50 cents, which was big money for a schoolboy, to send an aerogram to Radio Australia. Sit back and listen and hear my musical request. We had a record player at home. I had a tape recorder, but I like to hear it from Radio Australia. But today we haven't got that type of reception anymore.
You know, not too long ago, I started going through a number of tapes that I recorded in the 1980s, because there were certain shows that sometimes I would miss because I was either at school or out with the family. And one of the shows that I used to listen to all the time when I was in Canada was the John Peel Show on the BBC World Service. And I was going back to some of those tapes, some of those ones, some from Radio Netherlands, some from Deutsche Welle, even older ones from Radio Berlin International and Radio Moscow, and the VOA African Service. One of my favorite announcers that used to be on the VOA African Service was an announcer by the name of Georges Carinet, who worked in the English section.
Yeah.
And something
and
that
I had a booming signal out of Monrovia, Liberia.
Yes, exactly. And something that I noticed.
15440.
15440. Exactly. Yeah, you remember it just like I do.
Yes, they were broadcasting to Monrovia to East Africa. One hop more in Sri Lanka, they were stronger than the beam from the Philippines. Yeah. And I would love to listen to the African show.
Well, the thing that I when I was listening to these tapes recently. And when I listen to international broadcasters today, there is one ingredient that is definitely, definitely missing. Because one aspect of shortwave that made it extremely popular was the personalities that were on the air. Yeah. I find that today, you don't have... Well, there's still some of those personalities out there. But, I mean, for example, somebody that we both knew, Pete Myers. I mean, he was a personality in himself. But, you know, you don't have those personalities anymore.
Keith, that's because, as I said before, people who make the decisions have made shortwave a dying industry. Who is the young guy who would go into broadcasting to make a career because he knows that it's going to last only a few years according to the way things are being handled? So we are losing people like Pete Myers, Jonathan Marks, who was doing the letter from America. I've listened every
Alistair
day
Cook.
The BBC.
Alistair Cook.
Yeah, Alistair Cook. I mean, these the giants of international broadcasting. Do you think that people, I mean, well, we will have all this we had and we will have broadcasters, but who will go into international broadcasters because it is not an industry that you can see further into your retirement? So people just skip it. So that's the sad story. So you give a future and you'll get the type of people that the broadcasting industry needs. So this is, the chicken and egg situation we have.
Now, what about the trend that has been very popular in the last few years? The VOA do it, the BBC. China has been very active doing it, and also recently the Voice of Russia. And that is to get local stations in whatever market to relay programming.
Well, of course, it's not... That's one way that you can increase your audience. People, by placements, by having local FM relays, stations taking on programming like China, it's trying to get into the Indian market in a big way, you will reach an audience that you would never reach on shortwave. So it's not that you are transferring the people who listen on shortwave only or whatever. But the thing is, thereby, you open your broadcast to people, an audience that would never have gone on to shortwave. So by that, you are expanding your audience and your influence in those areas. So I agree, that's a fantastic way of going. And it's not every country that will allow that. And of course, change of regime. Now, we saw what happened in Sri Lanka. The BBC, Sinhala and Tamil services have been relayed by the Sri Lanka Broadcasting Corporation. During the height of the civil war, the program was taken off. So you see, with local placements, that's always the danger. So most of these stations, they want to have at least some form of shortwave broadcasting while they place, you know, these local FM transmissions. So I think that's the way to go. Definitely, you can increase your, you have the potential of getting a whole country to listen to you.
One final thing. One of the technologies in shortwave that many people have raved about, but unfortunately it hasn't been that successful, is DRM, Digital Radio Mondial.
Yeah.
Do you think that DRM still has a future?
Oh, they're very interesting. Just a month and a half ago that I took part in one of the DRM consortium conferences down here in Colombo. You see, DRM is fantastic. The quality, when you go above that threshold required. But the thing is, how many? The receivers. Do you think that people are going to invest in something totally new? They'd rather buy a computer today. We are talking about a computer for $100, you know, a small something, you know. So do you think that people are going to spend something on a DRM receiver? So if DRM receivers come into the market fast enough, it has been almost 25 years in coming. Whereas, say, if you take Apple or something, they'll introduce their new technology just like overnight. They think of every year something new comes up. But DRM, we've been talking for the last 25 years, and the receivers are, okay, it's just about coming. I think it has a future if it can get it act together and people are prepared to pay for it, to buy new receivers and things like that.
I know that some broadcasters are using DRM quite a bit. Radio New Zealand International has been using DRM to feed their signal.
It's a feeder, more or less. Yeah.
And they've been, when I spoke to their frequency manager, Adrian, a few months ago, he said they're getting very good results from that.
The quality is excellent if you can deliver a certain level of signal. Because, I mean, unlike shortwave, if you're broadcasting from the BBC, if you're beaming towards South Africa, I can still get an S2 to 3 level signal and hear it. But of course, on DRM, unless you go over something like S3 to S4 signal, I mean, you don't hear the signal at all. Mm-hmm. So that difficulty is there. There's no DXing on or listening to anything other than which is aimed at you. But actually, I would love to see DRM taking off. And if the receivers come into the market and affordable level fast before new technology takes over and we go into a different direction, I think DRM can succeed. But I don't place too much of my bets on DRM.
Victor, thank you very much for speaking to us.
Oh, it's been a pleasure, Keith. And greetings to whoever is listening anywhere in the world. And keep listening, whatever medium you choose, keep in touch with the world. Thank you, Keith.
And I was speaking there with Victor Gunatelika from his home in Colombo, Sri Lanka. Well, it's now time to announce the two lucky winners for a contest that we had on last month's show. The two listeners will be getting a copy each of the following books: Death of a Pirate by Adrian Johns, Axis Sally, The American Voice of Nazi Germany by Richard Lucas, The Real Taiwan and the Dutch by Menho Goethart, and a CD containing Taiwanese pop music from the 1930s. And the winners are
Mark Hawkins in the United Kingdom and Jennifer Rich in the United States. We'll contact you both in the next few days to confirm your address so we can get your prizes out right away. And for those who didn't win, we'll also contact you to confirm your address so we can send you a small thank you gift for entering.
And of course, with that, we've come to the end of this edition, the first edition of Media Network Plus for 2011. If you have any comments, suggestions, or ideas for shows, we'd love to hear from you. There are a number of ways to get in touch with us. First, our email address is pcjmedia@gmail.com. Once again, pcjmedia@gmail.com.
Or you can find PCJ on Facebook and Twitter. Just search for PCJ Media. And finally, for those who prefer a more traditional way of contacting us via snail mail, Keith will give you our postal address. Take a big breath, Keith.
Yes, I will. And I think actually we can have the Pony Express one day. I don't know. Our address is Media Network Plus, PCJ Media, 8th floor, number 47, Lane 31, Section 1, Sanmin Road, Banqiao, Taipei, ROC 22070. Now, I know some of you are saying, Keith, you said that way too fast, so I will say it a little bit slower. Media Network Plus, PCJ Media, 8th floor, that's floor 8, number 47, number 47, Lane, L-A-N-E, 31, Lane 31, Section 1, Section is S-E-C-T-I-O-N, Sanmin Road, that's S-A-N like Norman, M like Mother, I like Ivan, N like Norman, Sanmin Road, Banqiao, B-A-N like Norman, C-I-A-O, Taipei, Taiwan, ROC, and the postal code is 22070. And by the way, if you do go to our website, you can actually find all this information. Our website is www.pcjmedia.com. And while you're there, do feel free to download this and all past editions of Media Network Plus. I should also mention that if you do write us via snail mail, you will also receive a small thank you gift. But please remember, do not send any international reply coupons for return postage. You know, Paulette, what's really funny, we actually had a couple of letters that have come in to us where people actually sent money.
That's very sweet. It's a thought that counts, right?
A total of $8 US. I'm the last of the big time spenders. So, on behalf of me, Keith Perron, in Taipei, Taiwan.
And me, Paulette, in Vancouver, Canada.
We look forward to seeing you all again very soon. Bye-bye, everyone. We would very much appreciate your comments and questions about our programming here at PCJ Radio. You can contact us via email at pcjradio@gmail.com. Once again, that's pcjmedia@gmail.com. We also invite you to visit our website, www.pcjmedia.com, and listen to all our programs. You can either download them from the website directly or subscribe to all our programs in iTunes at www.pcjmedia.com. And while you're at our website, do take part in the Happy Station Show Friendship Sponsorship Program. There are three levels: silver for $1, gold for $5, and platinum for $10. The selection is yours. This is PCJ Radio.
This is station PCJ in Holland. And now for the remainder of the program, my friends across the fence, in Central America, in North America, and in South America, and also on board of ships cruising the seven seas, we wish you good reception, a good voyage, and good arrival in the next port. When you come to the next port, drop us a line. Maybe you can write this line now and post it when you come to the next harbor. Until the end of the program, we have some slumber music, and we hope you like our selections.
Op een tram te wachten, ik zag je in de verte staan. Toen keek ik je aan, je lachte. Samen zijn we voortgegaan. Weet je nog wel, die avond in de regen, het was al vlak voor negen en we liepen heel verlegen samen. Onder moeders paraplu.